We saw the main properties of the SVD. We saw also how hard, how heavy is the computation of the singular values and the singular vectors within a given accuracy. We saw that an estimate of the cost is about for n square, if I remember well the coefficient. Approximately. Is it possible? Question before giving a look inside the use of SVD in least minimal least squares, linear least squares approximation. Is it possible to replace the exact SVD with a less expensive approximate the composition? The answer is yes. And this answer is given by the so-called truncated SVD, SVD truncata. The idea is simple, and has a solid justification. The idea is the following. If we start from the exact SVD and replace with zeros the smaller singular values, the last smaller singular values. Consequently, we can delete the last columns of U and the last rows of V. Conjugate transpose, so we consider only, say, R dominant singular values, the first R columns, the first R rows here, we obtain another matrix. It is clear that we obtain another matrix, say AR, which can anyway be written using the full unitary matrix, a modified diagonal matrix, say sigma R, with a suitable number of zeros in the last positions, and the same third matrix, unitary matrix, U sigma R V H. The computation, the cost, the computational cost of this approximate the composition will be reduced, because the reason is that we do not need anymore the last columns here, the last rows here, and the last single values. So, one of these terms can be replaced, and I don't remember if M or N, I suppose N, can be replaced by R. R instead of M or N, the check. It should be done an accurate check of the new computational multiplicative cost. This is just the definition of truncated SVD. The reason, the formal, the theoretical reason of its importance is a nice result which you find in the statement of theorem this 7.15. In our assumptions, we have so a given integer r less than or equal to k. Who is k? K is the last positive singular value. So, to be clear, we have the last singular values, zeros. We stop here with considering the singular values in the truncated decomposition, say sigma r. So we will not consider the contribution of the singular values from the r plus 1 until the singular values sigma k. So given an integer smaller than k or equal to k, we define, I don't write again the definition of the truncated SVD, we have the new matrix R. Well, if we consider the set of square matrices, not square, rectangular matrices, B complex and rows and columns, having rank R. Abbiamo quindi l'insieme delle matrici delle stesse dimensioni di quella data, 20 rango R. Well, the matrix obtained using the truncated SVD minimizes the difference using the usual Euclidean norm over the set B is in S AR is the closest matrix of rank R, closest to B than A, and this minimum is the value of the first neglected singular value. Il risultato interessante, se io voglio approssimare una matrice rettangolare assegnata con una matrice di rango in genere più piccolo, anche molto più piccolo, bene, il minimo lo raggiungo troncando la decomposizione S su D al valore singolare corrispondente al rango prescelto. Caso più semplice, se io voglio approssimare una matrice generica con una matrice di rango 1, che è la cosa più povera che si può fare, a parte la matrice giusta, la matrice di rango 1 basta che includa nella decomposizione il solo valore singolare principale, il più grande di tutti, la peggiore delle possibili approssimazioni di A, però è la migliore all'interno di quelle di rango 1. The best approximation within this restriction on the rank of the matrix. Why this happens? The proof how is the usual way to prove that a given object is a minimum of something else? Two steps. First, I check that this value is reached by the matrix AR. So second step, I will prove that for any matrix D of rank R, I will have that the difference of the norm, the norm of the difference is greater than or equal to this. The first point is immediate, because I have both the matrices, the matrix A and the matrix AR, expressed in terms of their SDVs. Then I know well that the two norm leaves unchanged the unitary transformations leave unchanged the two norms, so I can write this difference. This is the exact SVD. This is the exact SVD of this matrix. This other U sigma R. I can delete both U and VH inside the two norm. So I have simply the two norm of the difference of two diagonal matrices. The difference is the leading R positions of the, along the diagonal is zeros. I have the first, the greatest modulus element of this diagonal matrix is minus plus sigma R plus 1 comes from this, so I have plus, and the other smaller singular values. So the two norm is simply if a diagonal matrix. The two norm of the diagonal matrix is given by the largest, the greatest modulus diagonal value. So this is done. The second point consider. Mm-hmm. the null space, the kernel of this generic rank R matrix. I know that the dimension of the kernel of the matrix is given by the number of columns minus the rank of the matrix, which is R, n minus R. Then I consider the linear subspace Z defined as the intersection between this kernel and, here, the subspace spanned by V1, V2, V sub R plus 1. This is a linear vector subspace, and when I intersect two linear subspaces, I
need the dimension.
Sorry. I will ask you after something about the dimension of this Z. This is subspace for the intersection of two linear subspaces. What about the dimension of this subspace? There is another well-known linear algebra theorem which says about the dimensions of subspaces, which says that if I consider the dimension of Z plus, I say, I write before N, plus the span lo spazio summa, the ordinary sum of two subspaces, that is the subspace which contains all the sums of vectors, one in the first subspace, one the other in the second subspace. This is given by the sum of the two dimensions, say in this case n minus r, plus, this is linearly independent. They are also orthogonal. So here I write R plus 1, just the number of vectors which span that subspace, minus R, N plus 1, minus the dimension of the intersection between these two, which has been called Z. But so we have that anyway. Due to the fact that we have anyway a subspace of C to the power n, this number cannot exceed n. N plus 1 minus dim z. N. So we have that dim z is greater than 1. That's okay, the signs are right. Yeah. What does it mean? This means that there is some non-zero vector in Z. All this allows us to say, to state that Sottospazio Z non è il sottospazio triviale, banale, costituito da solo vettore nullo, ma avendo dimensione maggiore o uguale di 1 contiene vettori non nulli. Ne prendiamo uno normalizzato. We pick a non-zero Z vector in capital Z. Normalize it. So this vector belongs to both subspaces. So we can write that P by Z is 0, but also Z is a linear combination of all these vectors, orthonormal vectors. J1, R plus 1, alpha J, by V. The square of the norm of this vector is given, if you take into account the orthogonality of the vector spanning the subspace, if the norm is 1, so also it's square, this means that the sum of the square of the moduli of the coefficients in this linear combination from 1 r plus 1 is 1 as well. We have this condition. Let us use all this in this way. What we want to see? We want to see that for any matrix B with belonging to S, this distance is not smaller than the fourth neglected singular value. We square all as usual and let us consider A minus B multiplied by Z. Z is normalized, so the norm of this vector is less than the 2 norm square of the different matrix. Just remember that an induced norm is the maximum of all these values we consider here for x normalized. We are considering here a particular z, so that this norm is greater than this value, but this value is given by A by Z, because B by Z is 0, B is in the kernel, in the null space of B. This value, this value, the SVD of A, U sigma VH Z. Unitary, the 2 norm. So the first matrix U can be deleted. Mm. this is equal to the method sigma VH Z. How this vector is made? Sigma is diagonal, so we have here sigma 1 by the first element, the first entry of the second vector of this vector. See this object as a column vector. Sigma 2 and so on, sigma until the last non-zero. The last non-zero, we have all the singular values. So here we reach the value k. So the true norm of this vector is given by the sum of the square for the index going from 1 to k of sigma. We continue to write the elements, the entries of this vector in this way. That is Z. This vector, we have to see better how this vector is made. The entry with index I of VHZ is given by the product of V I H, the column, the corresponding column of V, by the vector Z. But just remember that Z is a linear combination. This is the formula of the first column, so V. So when we perform this scalar product, we have alpha I. You see here this. You have V I conjugate transpose by V J here. This is the connector delta I J. The index J takes all this value. So we have here alpha J for J from 1 to R plus power plus 1. R plus 1. Yeah. So we can minimize, since the singular values are all right here, with the smallest among these values of the indices, the index I of the singular values, What is left? The sum of the squares of the coefficient alpha from j, from with j going from 1 to r plus a, 1. But we know that this sum gives 1 due to the normalization of the vector z we had picked up at the beginning of the proof. So the proof is complete. We have found that the difference, this difference, the difference was different. A minus B this is the square, sorry. The difference, I summarize the various inequalities we have found and which show the final result. This is the norm square. It's the maximum of these values. I consider the particular z defined in that way. We have found that this norm is greater than the square of the first deleted neglected singular value. We drop the power 2 and we find the desired result. Volevamo dimostrare questo. Bene, il risultato centrale dell'uso dell'SVD, of the use of the SVD decomposition in order to solve the linear least square problem, now is easy to prove. We start again from the minimum problem. The norm SVD the square as usual we transfer the matrix U conjugate and transpose it to the other term of the difference sigma v h minus this vector, the minimum of this vector. The first vector, the second vector, the difference, element by element. Here I have element, the entry of index I, sigma I forgot the x, sigma I the role of having the same index of V to the H. So V I H X, this is the number, minus, yeah, I have for the same reason U I H B. for the index starting from 1 and ending at the last non-zero singular values was k. For the other values of I, that is k plus 1 n, here I have a zero because sigma k is the last non-zero singular value. So I have here 0 minus a term of the same type. So the norm, the square of the norm, is given by the sum. This is the symbol of the sum for I from k plus from 1 to k plus la somma dei quadrati dei moduli delle prime k, dei primi k elementi, più gli ultimi n meno k elementi, che sono dati semplicemente. We have only the second term, so k the square of this scalar products. Now the minimum of all this, with respect to x, the vector x is very. The minimum is given by. There is something confusing. Yeah. See. Certo, sì, ma non è questo il problema. Io vado da k più 1 a i. La somma la divido in due parti, questo è chiaro. Qui ho termini di questo tipo, modulo al quadrato, e per questi valori ho termini di quest'altro tipo. Dunque, per avere. Dunque, devo aver scritto qualcosa di scorretto perché non mi torna più il risultato. Scusatemi. Allora, UHB. No, è corretto, però it is better to call this vector, as we have already done in a similar situation, with the letter y. So this is correct, Y I. So it is better to solve this minimum problem first with respect to y. If I want to minimize all this does not depend on y. This part, this sum, depends on y. I can choose y in such a way that this part is zero. What is the right way? Just define y sub I as I want this is 0. Because these values, these singular values, are non-zero. In this way, this part vanishes, and the minimum is given by the residual quantity, which is given by this formula. If I want, and this is what I want, to express the solution in terms of the vector x, I remember that x was defined, y was defined as vh x, so x is given by vy, and the final result is x I is given by the sum of say J, the curves of V, Vj, by Y, the same index. So the final result, finally, is sum of J U for J from 1 to how many are the columns of V to N. Okay. Domande? Dunque, l'Y l'avevamo definito fino a K, le componenti restanti come le definiamo? Sono libere, perché non vengono coinvolte. Se noi cerchiamo il vettore di minima norma, qual è la scelta naturale? Zero. Quindi assegniamo agli Y restanti valore zero, otteniamo quindi la soluzione di minima norma in termini di y. X però è v per y, ma v mantiene la norma perché è unitaria, quindi il risultato di minima norma per y vale anche per x perché la norma viene conservata. So let us write in a clear way this formula. This. So here we must stop to K. Sì.
Dunque, fermi tu.
L'indice era... dunque, vediamo un po' se mi sono perso qualcosa. Y. Dunque, dunque. Y, il passaggio precedente era questo. Poi abbiamo ottenuto x come v per y, abbiamo scritto x, no, l'indice non c'è, x è, può essere visto come una combinazione delle colonne, una combinazione lineare delle colonne di v con coefficienti yj, quindi qui scrivo somma dj yj. Quindi la I era, se volete potete mettere l'indice I che c'era prima. Quindi l'indice, questa è la soluzione completa, d'altra parte è una combinazione lineare di vettori di V e torna, it fits well with the properties, the general properties of the SVD decomposition. We saw that the columns of V, the columns of V span the columns of V span the kernel of A and the this is also expressed, is contained in that form. Another way, altre domande? Abbiamo ottenuto il risultato in modo un po' tormentato, ma alla fine qui avete direttamente espressa la soluzione minima norma usando alcune colonne di V, non tutte, quelle corrispondenti ai valori singolari non nulli, cioè la parte di decomposizione che risente o della nullità nella forma esatta oppure del fatto di averle trascurate nella forma troncata, avete alcuni valori singolari, tutti quelli non nulli o quelli che volete considerare più importanti, le corrispondenti colonne di V, le corrispondenti colonne di U e il vettore dei termini noti. Formalmente tutto questo può essere scritto in maniera can be written in nice form starting from the following consideration. Se A e F A is square non singular, if A is square non singular, X is given, X the solution coincides with the solution of the linear system, so it can be written simply as the inverse of A multiplied by the right term. This formula can be generalized formally, just in a formal way, to the general case, substituting this inverse by something else, which will be called A plus generalized inverse. If we define uh, in the non-square, in the non-singular square case, we had mu sigma diagonal square VH, so the inverse could be written as V, the inverse of sigma UH. In the non-square case, just substitute the central matrix sigma to the minus one with the following diagonal rectangular matrix. V is the usual V in the general case n by n. Here I put a rectangular diagonal matrix defined in some way we will see soon. Here I have m by n of h. Here I put a matrix which I will call sigma plus, defined with the inverses of the singular value when the singular values are non-zero, so for I from 1 to k, otherwise 0. I greater than k. The inverses of the singular values, 0 otherwise. If I define the matrix A plus in this way, VH sigma plus U, I am giving the definition of generalized inverse V sigma plus in the rectangular case, in order to have compatible sizes, this matrix is rectangular with here m and n column and rows, and here m columns, and here is the big matrix U. Definition, it is the same definition. Zero here. This way, we obtain a new matrix, A plus, which has n columns, n rows, sorry, and m columns, n by n. Complex, and it is easy to see that the solution expressed in these terms can also be written as x star v sigma plus UH by the right hand side non term B. In the ordinary case, this is the inverse. If all is square and the matrix is invertible, here we find again the inverse of A. In the general case, A is square and not invertible, otherwise A rectangular, we have another matrix which is called generalized inverse. This description is simply formal. Another way to write the same formula in a more compact way. È solo, sembra un gioco formale. Noi scriviamo la stessa cosa introducendo una apposita matrice che ci permette di riconoscere nell'espressione del risultato finale una formula simile a quella che avrei nel caso quadrato e matrice invertibile. In realtà l'inversa generalizzata ce ne sono diversi tipi. This is the most commonly used, and this called Moore-Penrose generalized inverse, and it has several properties. I just sketch the most relevant. If I consider the generalized Moore-Penrose inverse, I have all these identities. Algebraic identities. It is not true in the general case that the product of these two, this is plus, in the file it is written in a slightly different way. Non compare mai il fatto che A per la sua inversa è uguale all'entità, perché non avrebbe senso nel caso generale, però sono fatte salve queste identità algebriche ed è interessante sapere che questo oggetto definito in questo modo è l'unica matrice data rettangolare che soddisfa queste quattro proprietà algebriche. What is left? Cosa c'è? C'è un quarto metodo. Ora la SVD andava vista come terzo tipo di metodo per affrontare il sistema, abbiamo visto pregi e difetti. Il difetto principale è l'eccessivo costo computazionale. Esiste un quarto approccio, che è quello di un adattamento del gradiente coniugato. Voi vedete, il gradiente coniugato serve a risolvere sistemi lineari particolari, sistemi lineari con la matrice dei coefficienti di finita positiva. We have seen the conjugate gradient method as an elective choice for a special, very special kind of linear systems. Square, not singular, not only, but Hermitian positive definite. So, conjugate gradient for linear least squares. In the known case, we have A by X equal to V. And we introduced this method as a minimizing technique for the residual. In that case, the residual was zero. To give some detail, we have seen this this problem, minimizing the residual. As the residual was the gradient of the functional, we can introduce it in a suitable way, and so on. The main difficulty is that the matrix, in the case that has been studied, was Hermitian, positive, definite. No problem. We know that in the case of linear least squares, we can transform this problem into the normal equations system. Il sistema di equazioni normali è effettivamente un sistema con matrice di coefficienti hermitiana e finita positiva. Quindi, it makes sense applying the conjugate gradient to this system. But I told you several times that it is better to avoid the computation of these methods. So the idea is to modify the method in order to avoid the explicit computation of this matrix. This can be done, we will not see the detail of this modification, and the result is again an iterative method where the complexity per iteration, which is the important aspect for the choice of the right method, complexity per iteration. In the general case, you remember it was the main operation, the most expensive operation per iteration was the product of the square matrix A, or square, by a vector of the same dimension. In this case, we have to multiply the rectangular matrix A by a vector of the same size, or the right size. So we have, instead of n square per iteration, we will have O of m by n per iteration. This modification of the method enjoys the same convergence properties of the general method of this case, since we have again, in the case of Hermitian positive definite matrix. Last observation before stopping. We saw that, just short remarks. We saw that the reason for avoiding the computation of that matrix is the increasing of the condition numbers. The condition number was well defined when A is square. So the square and inverted. So it is clear that if we use the two norm, if A is square and invertible, you know that by the definition the norm of A and the norm, the two norm of A, the two norm of the inverse, we find the ratio between the maximum eigenvalue of this matrix over the minimum under square root. Then there is the particular case when A is Hermitian and so on. What happens? We know the SDD, so we can also write this as the ratio between the maximum singular value of A and the minimum singular value of the same matrix. By using the SVD, this is the same of this, since we saw that the singular values squared are the eigenvalues of this matrix. This can be extended to the general case. What do I mean? Any matrix, rectangular, square, non-invertible matrix, by formally, is nice because we can substitute the inverse with the generalized inverse, and we obtain again the ratio between the maximum singular value and the minimum singular value. So at this point we can give a sense to the statement I gave you three lessons ago, that the condition number of this matrix is the square of the condition number of the matrix, the given matrix. So since the condition number is always greater than or equal to 1, we have a worse case with respect to the original problem due to this reason.
Bene, ci fermiamo qua anche perché non c'è molto altro tempo, ma le cose principali le abbiamo dette tutte. Nella seconda parte, 20 minuti sono più che sufficienti, vi faccio vedere un esempio, un vecchio esempio che però dà un'idea dell'effettività di ciascuno dei quattro metodi quali, che abbiamo visto, quali la risoluzione del sistema delle equazioni normali con un metodo tipo Cholesky, il QR, l'SVD che abbiamo finito di vedere oggi, e poi si può anche provare a vedere che come si comporta il lente coniugato adattato al problema delle equazioni normali. Domande? Va bene, allora fermiamoci un pochino, questo sistema che sta a fare.